This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
Hi, my name is Sattva Multani.
I'm Ella Kleiger.
I'm in Puget Sound in Pierce County.
Hi, my name is Diane. I'm from Virginia. And I was just thinking about the post-pandemic world.
I'm wondering how COVID can affect some people living with only one kidney.
Am I now more vulnerable?
Why can't plastic face shields be used in lieu of a cloth face mask?
If I had the coronavirus and survived, am I now more immune?
Thank you.
Thanks. NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we will tell you that too. Send us questions about anything you want to know about the coronavirus pandemic or about how we're trying to cope with it to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. But every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? New unemployment numbers showed more than 30 million Americans have lost their jobs because of the pandemic in the past 6 weeks. 3.8 million people filed for unemployment benefits just last week. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell warned that recovery from that will not be fast.
It probably will take some time for us to get back to to a more normal level of unemployment and ultimately to maximum employment.
Hall County, Georgia is a new coronavirus hotspot. Cases are on the rise there and disproportionately impacting the Hispanic community. Dr. Antonio Rios with Northeast Georgia Health System said they need to get the message out about safety.
Several places, the numbers are going down. We haven't seen that, and we don't want our population to feel that the worst is over and it's okay to go back to not observing social distancing.
In Michigan, police allowed protesters, some with long guns, to enter the state house. The protesters say they want the governor to lift the stay-at-home order. Globally, Italy reported a record high in patient recoveries from COVID-19. 75,000 people have recovered from the disease there. And in the UK, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the efforts in the UK to fight the disease are working.
We're past the peak, and we're on the downward slope.
Delta, United, and Frontier announced today they will require passengers to wear masks or face coverings on flights. JetBlue made a similar announcement earlier in the week. More and more places are requiring people to wear masks, and that's probably why you've been asking us a lot of questions about masks. So joining us now to answer those questions is Jennifer Nuzzo. She is an epidemiologist and a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Jennifer Nuzzo, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
There's been a big shift on masks, I think it's fair to say. I mean, at the beginning of the month, the CDC changed its guidance and started recommending that people wear masks. What caused that shift?
Well, I think what caused that shift is a growing recognition of how this virus may be spreading. And in particular, noticing that people may be shedding virus and potentially able to infect others before they even know that they're sick, before they've developed recognizable symptoms. And because of that, because of the potential for people who are infected to not know that they're sick and possibly be out and about, there's concern that they may be able to infect people when they're out and about. And so that prompted interest in thinking about how could they, how could we potentially try to reduce that from happening.
And so we have a lot of questions from listeners, and we're just going to go to those now. This first one is from Carrie in Northern California.
Are the disposable paper masks just as effective as a cloth covering?
Jennifer?
Yeah, so we're learning a lot about masks. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of great data, particularly about masks that are homemade or just things that we are not typically using in healthcare environments. There's probably about three different factors that we should consider in thinking about masks. One is how good are they at trapping individual viral particles or droplets coming out of somebody's mouth who may be infected. And so materials that have, smaller pores are probably better able to trap the droplets. The second thing is how are people wearing them? So if they don't fit properly against your face, then it's more likely that more droplets could escape. And then the third thing is, what are you doing when you're wearing them? If you're having to adjust it because it's not comfortable or having to take it off because you just don't like the feel of it, then that's probably not going to make it very effective. So we don't know much about I've seen some interesting patterns out there for origami. We don't really know much about that. It's an interesting idea. But the worry that I would have is, one, as you're speaking, you might moisten it, and would that lead to a breakdown in the paper? And two, would it fit against your face? And would it be comfortable? Would you want to, you know, mess around with it and move it around on your face too much?
Well, we have a lot of questions about the whole question of fabric. So here's a question like that from Ariel in Hightstown, New Jersey. Here it is.
My mom and I are making fabric masks for friends and members of the community. We use very densely woven fabrics, but I've heard that spandex and other synthetic fibers can harbor the virus for a long time. What fabrics are recommended for homemade masks? Is polyester as clingy for viruses as spandex?
So do we know anything about that, about the various qualities of different fabrics, and any recommendations on fabrics if people are making their own, as a lot of people seem to be doing these days?
Yeah, so hard thing to judge in terms of particular classes of fabrics, because, again, it matters, for instance, how tightly woven it is, and different fabrics in a particular class may have different tightnesses in terms of how close the fibers are together. Generally, the CDC and others have said that a natural fiber mask that's tightly woven is probably preferable. One, because it's tightly woven, but two, because the natural fibers have sort of irregular fiber shapes, which may be more effective at trapping droplets than kind of synthetic fabrics that have more regular fiber shapes. That said, again, this goes back to behavior and what's comfortable for you. And, you know, a thicker mask may be harder for people to wear. And so I think the preference would be, if you had to choose, wear something that you can wear comfortably and not mess around with and keep fixing and trying to adjust on your face. Because, again, you could touch a contaminated surface, you touch your eyes or nose or mouth, because you're adjusting your mask, and we would worry that you could potentially infect yourself that way. Masks are not a complete solution. In fact, they're probably better at keeping you from infecting others than potentially getting infected yourself, just because there's other ways that you can be exposed. And so the key would be to make sure that if you wear it, you can wear it well, and then make sure that you're careful in sort of not touching it more than you need to and touching your face.
And interestingly enough, I have a question from Michael in Ithaca, New York, about something that you just said, and here it is.
I'm now told that wearing a homemade mask will protect others from me, but not me from them. Can't the virus pass in either direction through a mask?
You just mentioned something along those lines, so could you amplify that for us?
Right. So one of the things that we're worried about in terms of the mask is how tightly it fits around your face. And so if there are gaps, then there's the possibility for you to, you know, if you're infected and you don't know it, to have droplets of virus-containing droplets come out the sides of the mask. Or, you know, potentially if you're close to somebody who is infected, you know, perhaps droplets could enter around your mask that way. So that's, you know, important. The other thing is that the mouth is not the only way that you can get infected. And so if you're next to somebody and you're wearing a mask and, you know, you get viral droplets in your eyes, then that's another way to get infected too. So, again, it's with these masks, it's the goal really here is that we hope that if you are infected and you don't know it, the mask may reduce the amount of virus that you're putting out there for others to potentially be exposed to.
If you have a question about masks, you can still send it to us at npr.org/national conversation or share it on social media using the hashtag NPR Conversation. We're speaking with epidemiologist Jennifer Nuzzo. Here's a question we got from Alicia in Lake Oswego, Oregon, about the safety of cloth masks.
These masks offer less protection than N95 or surgical masks, and although some say they are okay as a last-ditch effort, I've read they may actually be detrimental, that they may concentrate the virus when damp, cause persons to touch their faces more in order to adjust them, or just plain give a false sense of security. What are the pros and cons of using such masks in a situation where there is no known exposure?
What do you think about that?
Yeah, great question. So some of the things mentioned, like fixing the mask on their face or giving a false sense of security, I think that's probably generally true about any kind of mask being used in the community, especially by people who are not used to wearing masks, and particularly who may be wearing them for extended periods of time as opposed to in a healthcare environment where it may be used for certain procedures and then removed carefully. So that's just something that we probably should consider. One of the concerns about all masks is how you put it on and how you take it off and wanting to make sure you don't contaminate the mask in the process. Mm-hmm. And so in a healthcare environment, healthcare workers are trained about how to put their mask on and how to take it off. And that's something that I think the general public who's wearing masks, you know, that are wearing masks, should also read up about how to do that safely.
And we're learning a lot about that. Can we just squeeze in one more? Because this is something a lot of people have been asking about. This is from John in Oxford, England, who's seen suggestions that N95 masks should be reused if they're put aside for 3 days. Just very quickly, if you could. Here it is.
My question is this recommendation valid? And if valid, could you expose the mask to dry heat, such as from clothes dryer, sun lamp, hair dryer, oven, bread proofing station, for example, at a certain temperature to reduce the period between reuse without damaging the mask?
I know that's a lot, but Jennifer Nutter, what do you think, as quickly as you can?
I would be really worried about treating an N95 mask with any kind of heat or anything like that, because you could really damage the materials or distort the fit on your face, and I think it wouldn't achieve what it needs to do.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. That's Jennifer Nuzzo. She's an epidemiologist and a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Jennifer Nuzzo, thanks so much for talking to us and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And this is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.